I remember that day and that moment as if it had just happened. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was trying to go visit my cousins in a cabin they had rented during the vacations. The cabin was beautiful, all the luxuries, but the drive to get there was the problem. I admit, I am a bit impulsive, and I didn't want to take too long a road, so I took a route suggested by the GPS, which was supposed to be the fastest way, although it looked pretty ugly. I was on a very small and totally uninhabited trail, clearly not a place I wanted to stay too long. The place had something I didn't like, a feeling of abandonment. Not a road sign, not a house for miles, just trees and a gravel road that crunched under the wheels of my car. The first sign that something was wrong appeared when I saw a pickup truck blocking the road ahead. I slowed down and approached carefully. The back of the vehicle was open, and two men were removing something large from inside. At first, I thought they'd had a problem. Possibly the back doors of the van had opened and the bags had fallen out. After getting a little closer, I realized that they hadn't dropped anything. They were dumping garbage in the woods. Huge black battered sacks which they were throwing on the ground without any care. I am a very cautious person, don't confuse me, but I am also an active environmentalist. And when I see someone irresponsible messing with nature, I get angry. The men were imposing and they weren't looking at me in a very friendly way. My body tensed, but anger was quicker than fear. I rolled down the window and shouted, "Hey, you can't leave that here! Get out of here or I'll call the police!" One of the men, the most imposing, turned his head toward me. His face was covered with sweat. From the look on his face, he didn't like my answer at all.
"What did you say? Who do you think you are?"
I didn't answer. I realized that I couldn't move forward. The van covered absolutely the whole road. The second man, thinner but with an even more disturbing look, appeared from behind the van. Both moved as if they were used to intimidating people.
"Hey, are you filming?"
"Give me your phone."
At that moment, I noticed the men approaching quickly. This was no longer an environmental discussion or a bad work practice. I was filming and seeing something I shouldn't be. At that moment, my survival instinct kicked in. I put the car in reverse and stepped on the gas. The burly man reacted quickly. He lunged toward the driver's window and managed to grab the frame. For a second, I thought he had it on him. But the sudden movement of the car threw him off balance. He fell to the ground with a thud, and I accelerated backward like crazy. The other man stayed with the one who fell, making sure he was okay. I hadn't gone more than 20 meters when everything came to a screeching halt. I felt a brutal impact on the right side of the car. Another vehicle, a gray pickup truck I had not seen before, had come out of the woods and rammed into me with full force. The car spun on itself and ended up stopped in the middle of the road, the engine coughing as it was about to shut down. Before I could react, the driver's door burst open. One of the men grabbed my arm and dragged me out of the car as if I weighed nothing. I tried to hit him, to scratch him, but his strength was superior.
"Let me go!"
"Save your energies. No one will listen to you here."
I tried to resist, but all to no avail. They put me in the back of the van, next to the huge black sacks they stopped throwing because of me. The smell was unbearable, a mixture of dried blood and rotting flesh. For a moment, I thought they were human. But because of the size, it was impossible. I think they were pieces of rotten animal flesh or something. Whatever it was the most disturbing thing I ever smelled in my life. The vehicle stopped in a clearing in the woods, in front of a rickety shack that looked like it was about to collapse. They yanked me out and carried me inside, where I was thrown on the ground like another one of those sacks. The place was littered with tools and bloodstains. In one corner was a pile of sacks like the ones I saw before, but some were open. They weren't just trash. They were bodies, dismembered, stained with dirt and blood, as if they had been treated as waste.
"What do we do with this one?"
"The usual."
"What are you going to do with me? You don't have to do this. Please let me go."
They talked about me like I wasn't there. I cried and screamed the whole trip, but it was useless. They just ignored me. They didn't seem scared or bothered by me. They were just really indifferent to my suffering. After driving for a while, the man took me to a warehouse in the middle of the forest. They weren't alone. There was also the guy who crashed into me. He looked visibly more nervous. He seemed very scared. They tied me to a chair with a rope that looked sturdy, but as I moved, I realized that they had done a sloppy job. The knot was not tight. While the men were arguing in another room, I began to move my wrists carefully, pulling and twisting until I felt the rope give way. When I managed to free myself, my heart was pounding. I knew I had to be quick and quiet, but I became nervous and instinctively ran as fast as I could. I advanced toward the back door, but my escape was short-lived. One of the men ran after me, and by the time I realized it, he was already behind me. His reaction was instantaneous. He grabbed me by the hair and threw me to the ground. I tried to kick him, but the big guy came and pinned me down. This time, I was bound with duct tape, making sure I couldn't move an inch. The back door opened, and in came the other man who looked like he had been in the bathroom all this time. His face was pale, and his eyes showed a nervousness that the others did not have. "This is bad."
"Shut up and do your job."
The young man looked at me. His hands were shaking, but his expression changed. As the other two went outside to move more of the sacks, he reached over and began cutting the duct tape.
"I can't let them kill you. This is my fault. I didn't want to hit you, but I was afraid and reacted without thinking. Do you know what they would have done to me if I didn't?"
"Hey, calm down."
"Please, release me. I don't want to die. I'll pretend nothing happened."
My words seemed to calm him down. When he released me, he motioned for me to follow him to the back of the hut. When we arrived, he held his hand out.
"Here, take this."
Before I could respond, the shouts of the other men echoed through the cabin. They had noticed our absence.
"Run now!"
I jumped into the car and started up just as they came running toward me.
"Hey! He got away from me! She attacked me and ran away! Stop her!"
I arrived at the police station covered in dust and shaking. I could barely speak, but I managed to tell them what happened to me. I gave them directions, details of the men, and everything I could remember. Hours later, the officers found the cabin. All three men were found, including the one who had helped me. The only problem is how they found him. He was dead. He was drowned in the toilet until he lost his life. Apparently, I didn't come across some simple workers throwing away a package. That was the mafia, and even though they were not human corpses, the video I took was able to unmask their dealings with several restaurants. The police said to take care of me that there would be patrol cars near my house and that they would put me in witness protection. But to be honest with you, I am scared. I am very afraid. Afraid that I won't catch up, and that sooner or later, those men or others will find me.
I never had a great relationship with my grandparents, but when I inherited their old house, the idea of moving didn't seem so bad. I needed a change of air, and the house was in a quiet location. There was dust in every corner, but the place had a certain charm, as if every crack in the walls told a story. As I was unpacking, I found a standing mirror with a cabinet underneath in one of the rooms. It was covered by a grayish cloth, which, when I removed it, released a cloud of dust that made me cough like crazy. The mirror had a solid wood frame, and although somewhat worn, it was still imposing. Rummaging through the drawers of the cabinet, I found an old photo. It showed a child sitting in front of the same mirror. The boy was looking directly into the camera with a neutral expression. I assumed it was my grandfather as a child. I was intrigued that the mirror had lasted so long, but I didn't think much of it. I put the photo away and went on about my business. The first few days in the house were normal. I settled in, organized my things, and enjoyed the quiet. However, I couldn't help but feel that the mirror caught my eye every time I passed that room. It was a strange feeling, but I thought I was simply adjusting to the place. After all, no move is ever easy, especially if I'm moving out on my own. A few days after moving in, I started hearing banging in the house during the night. At first, they were soft, as if something small was moving between the walls. I assumed it was rats or some animals seeking shelter from the cold. It was an old house. I was no longer in the apartment with my parents. Here, there was a lot more maintenance work to do. It didn't bother me too much, but the knocking became more frequent and louder with time. They were especially loud near the mirror room. One night, I decided to investigate. Armed with my cell phone flashlight, I walked down the dark hallway to the room. As I entered, I noticed that everything was silent. A silence I was not used to, as apartments are noisy even in the wee hours of the morning. I looked around with the flashlight, but there was nothing out of the ordinary. Everything was in its place, including the mirror. I went back to my room, thinking maybe I was overreacting, but the knocking came again. Now they were so loud, they were rattling my walls. I decided to confront whatever was causing the noise. I grabbed my phone, turned on the flashlight, and went back to the mirror room. When I arrived, the scene I saw chilled my blood. In the opposite corner of the room, a middle-aged man was banging his head against the wall. His figure was barely distinguishable in the gloom, illuminated only by the beam of light from my phone. His movements were mechanical, repetitive, as if he were trapped in an endless cycle. For a moment, I doubted if I was even seeing straight. "Are you all right?" It didn't occur to me to say anything else to him. It didn't even occur to me to question the fact that he was in my house or to ask him who he was. The man stopped abruptly. He turned his head towards me, but the rest of his body remained motionless. In that instant, fear paralyzed me. His face was completely disfigured, as if someone had molded it upside down. Before I could react, he ran toward me. I staggered back and slammed my bedroom door shut. My heart was beating so fast that I felt like I was going to explode. I stood there listening, waiting to hear his footsteps approaching, but there was nothing. Everything was silent. I checked under the door, but there was no one on the other side. I didn't sleep that night. The next day, I called the police. I told them about the knocking and the man I had seen, but when they arrived, they found nothing. The mirror room was exactly the same as always. The officers checked the house and told me that it had probably been a vagrant, and to check if I had any loose windows or passageways that someone could enter at night. I was frustrated, but also a little relieved to think that maybe they were right. I decided to install a security camera in the mirror room. I wanted to know if someone was breaking into the house, or if there really was something else going on. That night, the banging returned. I avoided doing anything or going to the source of the sound, as it could be dangerous. It was better to lock myself in and see in the morning what had happened. I checked the video the next day, but there was nothing. All I could see was the empty room illuminated by the dim light coming through the window. However, the banging was so loud that I was sure something must be there. It didn't make any sense. The next night was the worst. I awoke nervously to the noise. Now the knocking seemed to be coming from my room. I woke up in a cold sweat, and when I looked toward the source of the noise, I saw the man with the deformed face. He was banging his head against the wall next to my bed. Adrenaline rushed through me. I quickly looked at the door to my room. It was locked, just as I had left it. How had he gotten into my room? Before I could react, he lunged at me. His hands closed around my neck with superhuman strength. I tried to struggle, but his fingers were like pincers. As he choked me, I got a close-up view of his deformed face with eyes that seemed to be sunken into his skull. His mouth was twisted as if someone had stretched it sideways. I could not breathe. My hands were hitting his torso, but it was like hitting a wall. Suddenly, I woke up. I was alone in my room. Had it been the most real nightmare I'd ever had in my life? Gasping, I noticed that my neck hurt like hell. When I went to the bathroom to look at myself, I saw it. Finger marks. It might have been a dream, but it was as real as any person choking me. That night I left the house and stayed in a hotel. I did not return for several days. When I did return, I went back to my father. I told him everything that had happened. I thought he would not believe me, but his face darkened. He confessed to me that as a child, he had also experienced strange things in that house, but he never had the courage to talk about it with anyone. We went to the mirror room to inspect further. I showed him the photo I had found. His expression changed when he saw it. "This is not from my childhood. This is not my dad. This photo is recent. He pointed to some marks on the wall that matched the actual wear and tear. That meant it had been taken recently, but with an old camera. We looked at the photo more closely and realized something frightening. The boy's reflection in the mirror didn't match his position. He was looking directly at the camera, but his reflection seemed to be looking at something behind him. We were both terrified, but we understood what to do. We took the mirror outside, assuming that somehow it was the cause of what was happening. Just in case, we set the photo on fire. We didn't want to leave any suspicion or possibility in the air. For the next few nights, my father stayed on a mattress with me sleeping. The knocking came again, but this time it came from outside. The night the mirror was in the doorway of the house, my father and I looked out to see the source of the banging. My dad almost screamed when, from the window, he saw the man I was looking at. The look on my dad's face was one of absolute terror, but at the same time, it was a look of someone who recognized that person. The next day, the mirror was taken away, and I never heard another sound during the night. Confused and looking for an answer, I asked him why he had let me come here if strange things were happening to him. I asked him why he had never told me or my mother anything. Terrified, he only said one sentence that I will never forget for the rest of my life. I don't know how, but I forgot. From the moment I left that house, I just forgot.
My YouTube channel wasn't famous or even profitable. We barely reached 200 subscribers, but that was never the goal. Liam, Nate, and I were driven by the thrill of exploring the unknown, or filming scary stuff, even if it was only for a small audience. Our latest idea took us to Mitre Park in Fermat. Liam had read about the famous hammocks that move on their own.
It's an Argentine classic. The hammocks have been moving by themselves for almost 20 years, and no one can figure out why,
he said, convinced that we could get an authentic video. We set off that same night, loading the cameras and a portable light in my truck. The drive was quiet, with Nate and Liam going on and on about the rumors. A dead boy possessing the hammocks, apparitions, unexplained hammock movements. I kept quiet and focused on the road. We arrived at the park after 10 o'clock at night. The place was completely deserted. The public lights barely illuminated the swings and the rusty games. Everything looked old, neglected. We settled near the hammocks, three swings worn out by time, two still and one slightly tilted as if the wind had left it in a bad position. Liam started filming as soon as he got out of the van. Nate took care of the photos. I adjusted the portable light for a more professional touch. Tonight, something's going to happen. I can feel it. I had said it so many times before that it sounded like a ritual. This time, however, I couldn't imagine how true it would be. The first few hours were slow. We shot several angles of the hammocks and the surroundings. The wind was blowing hard, and although it made the hammocks move slightly at times, it was nothing special. Liam was still filming enthusiastically while Nate and I exchanged pleasantries to kill time. Around 1 a.m, everything was strangely still. No wind, no insects, no rustling of branches. It was as if the whole park had frozen over. Liam noticed the change and began to speak into the camera.
This is what they look for at home. Silence before something big happens.
At 4 a.m, something did happen. The hammock in the middle began to sway slowly. At first, I thought it was another wind current, but the other two hammocks were completely still. Liam ran towards it with camera in hand, filming every possible angle.
This is real!
The movement became faster. The hammock was going up and down with a force that couldn't be explained. Nate and I froze, watching.
I'm getting in!
Before I could stop him, he dropped the camera on the ground and ran to the hammock. Liam jumped up like a kid on the playground.
He started swinging higher and higher. He was laughing like a madman, shouting things for the camera he had left recording on the ground.
"This is amazing, guys! We're doing it!"
But his laughter suddenly died down.
"What's going on?"
Liam stared straight ahead as if he'd seen something.
"There's someone out there."
"What do you mean? There's no one there." Nate focused his flashlight straight ahead, but there was nothing. Just tall grass and the shadows of the games.
"I see him. It's a boy."
Before he could say anything else, the hammock stopped dead in its tracks and Liam shot backwards as if something invisible had pushed him with all its might. His body flew several feet away and crashed into the metal fence. The crash echoed throughout the park. We ran to Liam, who lay unconscious on the ground. He had a deep cut on his head and his breathing was ragged.
"We need to get him to a hospital."
Nate nodded and followed me to the van. We got Liam into the back seat. I made sure to get him settled, but when I turned around, Nate was gone.
"Nate, where are you?"
I looked around, and then I saw him. He was sitting in the same hammock where everything had happened. He was swaying slowly, staring blankly. I ran to him.
"Nate, what are you doing? Get up! We have to go!"
He didn't answer. He seemed hypnotized. His mouth was moving, mumbling something, but saying nothing. I tried to get him out of the hammock, but he wouldn't move. It was as if he was glued to it. Suddenly, I heard the horn of the pickup truck. I turned instinctively, but it was impossible. Liam was still unconscious. How could he have recovered that quick and honked the horn? After the distraction, I turned back to Nate. But he was no longer in the hammock. How had he disappeared so quickly? I started looking around for him until, surprisingly, I found him. I saw him running towards me from the other side of the park. He was coming at full speed, his eyes wild. Before I could react, he grabbed my neck and began to squeeze with a force that was not normal. His hands were cold, as if they weren't human. I tried to scream, but I could barely breathe. Gathering all my strength, I pushed him away. He fell on his back on the floor. I started to cough and to get up, but when I looked in his direction, he was gone again. How could he just disappear like that? The park was deserted. Then I heard something, a rustling sound. I looked towards the hammocks. Someone was sitting down again, and it wasn't Nate. It was a figure sitting in the middle one. It was a child, or so it seemed. But it wasn't anything human. Its shape was blurry, like it was made of smoke. I blinked, but this time, it didn't disappear. The figure watched me from the hammock as it began to sway in a slow, deliberate rhythm. Its presence became more terrifying, and suddenly, out of absolute nothingness, the child changed. He lengthened his shape, distorted into something much larger and more terrifying. A man with a grotesque figure who kept looking in my direction. I ran to the van, ignoring the cold that enveloped me. I jumped in and slammed the door shut. Liam was still passed out in the back seat, but his breathing was heavy, ragged. I turned the key in the ignition, but the van wouldn't start.
"Come on, come on!"
The engine roared once, but shut off immediately. Outside, the figure moved forward. He walked slowly, calmly, as if he knew he was in no hurry. The dark silhouette seemed to absorb what little light was left in the park. I tried to start again, tapping the steering wheel in frustration. The figure was only a few feet away when the engine finally started. I stepped on the accelerator and the van lurched forward, pulling me away from the park. In the rearview mirror, the figure stood still, watching, until it disappeared into the shadows. I arrived home exhausted, my hands shaking. I left the van in the driveway and checked the back seat, but it was empty. Liam was gone.
My head was spinning as I tried to figure out what had happened. I went into my room and grabbed my phone to call someone, but noticed I had several notifications. They were messages from Nate and Liam. They said things like, "Where are you?" and "You were supposed to pick us up to go to the park." My body tensed. Images began to cross my mind, as if I was suddenly remembering something. At what point did I pick up my friends from their homes? I remember getting into my truck alone, and all of a sudden, I was arriving in Fairmont. My friends, they were never with me. As soon as I remembered this, I didn't answer any messages. I just put down the phone and started crying. This story is based on the well-known paranormal phenomenon of the swings in Fairmont, Argentina. For over 2 decades, reports have emerged of a swing set in the Mitre Park that defies explanation. One swing in particular moves on its own, often with a force and consistency that dismisses wind as the cause. Witnesses claim that even in the stillest nights, the swing begins to rock as if an unseen presence were playing. Paranormal enthusiasts and locals alike have reported chilling encounters, and some even speak of seeing fleeting shadows near the swing at night, resembling the silhouette of a child. Despite investigations, no definitive explanation has been found, leaving many convinced that this is an authentic supernatural occurrence. The mystery of the Fairmont swings persists to this day, continuing to attract attention from around the world. It's been over 20 years since the first accounts, and yet the strange activity shows no sign of stopping. Those who dare to visit the park after dark frequently describe an eerie atmosphere, with whispers of shadowy figures moving between the playground structures. While skeptics search for a rational cause, believers are certain something otherworldly resides in Mitre Park, and it's not going anywhere.